it's interesting that I was able to lead the company, you know, through $1.5 billion. And that's just so unheard of. Usually the entrepreneur starts the company,
right,
and they get to $1 million to $10 million. They bring a partner or manager in, and next thing you know, they want an operator. The skill set that you need as an entrepreneur is a little bit different than what you need to run a business every day. And so it's not uncommon at about $10 million, the founder of the company is either gone or a different role, and there's someone else running it. At $100 million, it's really, really rare. You get to $1 billion, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but I'm saying you get to $1 billion and you still have the founder there. What I did, yes, I did get better. Yes, I did improve. But the biggest thing I did is I hired great people around me.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, I am so excited about the conversation we have coming today. Chuck Surak is based out of Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he founded and has led for many years Sweetwater Sound. Now, if you've ever ordered an instrument or any kind of musical technology, you've probably come across Sweetwater. It now does more than $1.5 billion of revenue a year and has been a great influential company in our country. Chuck also owns a variety of other companies. And he and his wife, Lisa, are active philanthropists giving to more than 600 organizations annually. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Brian. I'm happy to be here and happy to share a little bit.
Yeah, so grateful to be able to have this conversation. It's funny, when I mentioned to some family members of mine that live in Fort Wayne that you were coming on, I was shortly thereafter sent with a clip of you playing saxophone at some kind of event. And I know you're an accomplished musician and you still play, but I watched this clip and I thought, this is not just a hack here. This man can play the sax. Are you still playing regularly?
I do. I play probably 6-7 times a month. I've played my whole life, and it's just a great release from my day jobs.
Yeah. Are you part of a band proper, or is it more just kind of moonlighting here and there?
Oh no, I'm in 3 different bands. I play in a 9-piece R&B soul band with 3 horns and a whole rhythm section. I play in a little trio, another fellow and a singer I've been with for more than 20 years. And then we're in an 18-piece big band. And
wow.
I used to play at my church. I haven't done that in a while, but I'd love to do that again if I could.
Wow. So the founder of Sweetwater has some major musical cred, is what we're hearing here. Not just a gearhead, but you know your way around. Is it just sax? I know you mentioned different kinds. Do you play other instruments too, or just sax?
I do. It's kind of funny. I play almost everything except stringed instruments. I barely could play a guitar. I mean, I know how to form a few chords, but and yet we sell hundreds of thousands of guitars every year at Sweetwater. But
yeah.
I play trumpet. I play clarinet. I play keyboards. I've played drums in a band before, so a little bit of everything.
Okay. It's funny, we're going to be back in Fort Wayne actually in a few days post-Christmas to visit family, and I'll be visiting one of your businesses because one of our holiday pilgrimages is always to go to Sweet Cars, and we drive around the lot and just get to gawk, you know, looking's free, and it's fun to look at what's on the lot at any given time.
Well, I hope you get to come inside because there's even nicer ones inside.
It's funny because we're always there off hours. We should be more intentional and thoughtful and actually get there when we could walk on the, yeah, because I never have. We just drive around the parking lot.
Oh, man, there's some beautiful cars. I was just there a couple days ago, and there's some beautiful cars inside right now.
Okay, I'm adding that to my goal list. We're gonna make an in-person visit to the inside of Sweet Cars and not just drive around the parking lot and show up on the security camera. Well, I'd love to hear, you've got a great story. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about just kind of where you come from and then transition that into the founding of Sweetwater.
Wow. Okay. It's a long story, but I'll try and make it short. You know, I grew up in Southern Ohio. My dad was a chemical engineer. My mom happened to be from Fort Wayne. They got married when he went to a college here in Indiana, and he got his job in Southern Ohio as a chemical engineer. And I spent my first 12 or 13 years in Southern Ohio, and kind of an interesting story. But I have 4 brothers and sisters, or a brother and 3 sisters, and my mom has some mental health issues. And I used my youth to find ways to kind of escape that, if you will. My brother and my sisters maybe had some other challenges they dealt with. But I started selling potholders at age 5, 15 cents a piece, 2 for a quarter in my little town of 5,000 people in Southern Ohio. And then I had a paper route. Most of my friends had 40 or 50 papers. I figured out if I delivered to apartment complexes and senior citizens' homes, which are small and close together, I could have 330 papers to be delivered. And I just kept myself really, really busy as a little guy. And what really, I think, set me up for life was Boy Scouts. And Boy Scouts are less popular today, maybe, than they were when I was a kid. But they were just great principles. And a Boy Scout learns to be trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, thrifty, clean, brave, and reverent. And every one of those principles are great principles to live by at a personal level. Mm-hmm. But they've also been the principles that I've run my businesses by. And I won't repeat them, but you can Google them and find the Scout Law. And they're just great, great principles that we've done our whole life with. And that's what's really set me up for life.
That is really cool. It's interesting. You know, you've really done there is mentioned on the one hand, those are great character principles, you know, when it comes to how we operate. But then even seeing those seeds of entrepreneurialism from a young age is such a good hint, such a good clue as to where your journey would take you. And it's funny as you're sharing, because I can look back on the early days when dot matrix printers were a new thing. And I used, that was my one Christmas present I asked for. And I would, this is elementary school for me, I would make banners for kids like that would for their teams, you know, go Indiana Hoosiers, go, and I would charge them per page. And then I got a paper out. Paper outs were great money, it turns out. It was amazing. And then continued to just be a starter. It's funny though, you see those clues, and that's a good thing for listeners to start paying attention early to the clues in your life that might point you to future ahead. And already you're developing some of these character traits and disciplines through Boy Scouts. You're seeing these clues of entrepreneurialism and business starting. And then at some point, and you've got music probably going along this whole path. What point did you start thinking about Sweetwater? And it's such a great, great origin story.
Yeah. And before I get there, sure. Talking about entrepreneurship, I got to sit in a meeting a few years ago with the folks that own the Gallup poll. And we were talking about entrepreneurship, and you know, it's one of those things. It's sort of hard to test for. And you know, if you're a good scholar, athlete, or scholar or an athlete, you can figure that out real quick. And they test, and next thing you know, you're on your way to the big schools or athletic things. But entrepreneurship is sort of hard to figure out. And what the folks from the Gallup were telling me, they figured out that if you look at a kid when he's a kid or a teenager, and how many jobs has he had, how many roles has he had, that's a pretty good clue. And
interesting.
I've thought about that over the last few years, and it is really interesting. I had several other entrepreneurial type things. Back in those days, you could buy Toro lawnmowers, as an example. I ended up getting about 10 lawnmowers, and I had 6 friends that were working for me, and I was only 13, 14 years old.
I love that.
Yeah, every twice a year, our city got rid of all their old bicycles that they have picked up, I'd buy all the bicycles at the bicycle auction, come back and take 3 and make 1 bike out of them and all that. I could go on and on all the entrepreneurial sort of things that I did. So it clearly set me up for the Boy Scout, for the Sweetwater. And you're right, music was already started for me. Like a lot of kids back then, I started to play an instrument in 5th grade.
Yeah.
I wanted to play trombone. My dad says, you don't want to play trombone, you want to play saxophone. And I said, why is that? He said, well, the saxophone player gets all the solos. Well, I didn't even know what that meant in 5th grade, but my dad was an accordion player, so I think he was probably frustrated and living vicariously through me. So I started playing saxophone, and I never took a private lesson, and you know, I've gotten to the day where I've played all over the country and played professionally, and it's still a great hobby and great fun thing for me. But what really changed my business, or changed my life, is after being on the road through high school, 5 years after being on the road, boy, I said that really poorly. I was on the road after high school and came back and go, what do I do? And so I had a VW bus that my parents had given me as a junior in high school. It was beat up. My mom had wrecked it. So I filled it with 2 gallons of Bondo. I spray painted it with 99-cent cans of blue spray paint from Kmart. And that's what I used on the road. And when I came home, I had the bus, a little bit of recording equipment, and I'd always been technically inclined anyway. So even from the side of the stage, I would run the mixing console or the audio equipment while I'd play saxophone with one hand. And I thought, well, I had this recording equipment, and I would start a mobile recording studio. And so I would pull the bus alongside the school, the church, the nightclub, anywhere where there was music or spoken word going on, and I would record the choir, the preacher, the company president, and sit in the bus with my headphones on and record them. And then eventually I would take those recordings to the living room of my 12x55 mobile home, where I would edit them and put the songs in the right order, the performance, whatever it was, and then send those away to make LPs or cassettes back in those days. And then eventually it became CDs. I eventually moved from the mobile home to a small little 1,000-square-foot house where I built a recording studio on the end of the house. And in 1984, a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to go to the NAMM show. NAMM stands for National Association of Music Merchants. back in those days, it used to be in Chicago. Today, it's out in California. But I said, yeah, I'll go with you. And I saw a prototype of a music instrument called the Kurzweil K250, an amazing instrument that played back digital recordings of other instruments. And up until then, we had electric pianos, we had organs, we had synthesizers, but this actually played back a digital recording of a 9-foot grand piano, a 45-piece string section, an upright bass. And I thought, well, how cool is this? When this machine comes out, if I bought one of those, I could use it in my own recording studio and offer extra to my customers. Would you like to hear your music with a 45-piece string section or a 50-voice choir or whatever it did?
Right.
And so as soon as it became a real product, I ended up buying the machine. It was serial number 32. And I quickly reverse engineered how it worked because you could record your own sounds into it. Back in those days, you needed a Macintosh 512. Think about that. It was a long time ago. But you hook a cable in and load new sounds in. And so being a recording guy, I recorded my own instruments and other instruments and made my own sounds for it. And it was pretty easy to reach out to other K250 owners. But you have to understand, back in those days, it was about a $20,000 instrument, 1985, 86. And there's about $20,000 of upgrades you could put in it. You could pull three screws out, open the drawer, and put more sounds or more effects in it. And I started reaching out to people that had them and go, wow, you have a K250? I have one too. It was kind of a brotherhood. But it tended to be either successful recording studios, some of the big universities, and famous musicians. So I was not shy about reaching out to Stevie Wonder and Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton, all these old artists. And next thing you know, they're wanting to use my sounds. And so they were using my sounds on their records. They were giving me credits for the sounds. And I'll never forget that they all of a sudden wanted to buy second and third machines. And I just couldn't comprehend why they would want another $20,000 to $40,000 synthesizer. Well, they wanted them for their green room. They wanted them for their bus. They wanted them when they toured. So I became a dealer for those machines and kind of was getting annoyed because it was taking me away from doing recording work in my studio because I'm helping my friends with their Kurzweil K250s, which is really funny. And I'll never forget getting a call from one day, and they said, hey, I understand you can do sheet music on the computer. And I said, yeah, I know how to do that. I'm already doing that in my studio. And well, can you help me? So I became a dealer for software that would run on the computer, and kind of the rest is history. Then I started selling recording equipment, and I'm still operating out of a small house on the west end of Fort Wayne.
Wow.
And now I've got four friends that are working with me. And we moved in 1990 to our first commercial building where we had five employees. And then we stayed there for the next 17 years. We picked up more and more brands. We helped more and more of my friends and their friends. And you fast forward, we moved out in 2006. And we had 220 employees or so. And
wow.
A million customers by then.
Wow. Was there any point, and maybe it's locked in with some of the facility changes you've had over the years, was there any particular point or points where you stood back and you thought, holy smokes, look what this has become?
It took me a long time. You know, I would tell you in the 80s and 90s and into the 2000s, I was just reinvesting everything I made and back into the business. And I will also tell you, those days I had credit cards maxed out and second mortgages on homes and or on the home, I should say. But I can't tell you that I had the vision of what it was going to become. And I really didn't care about making it big. That was never my deal. My deal was just helping my friends. And in a weird sort of way, to me, it was a ministry. And I just love, through the years, that we've been able to help so many people, whether it's with their ministry specifically or just trying to do things the right way. That's always been our motto, to always do the right thing. And we may not have a church or a cross in front of our building, but we clearly work and operate on Christian principles. Mm-hmm. You know, but I also want to be open to everybody. So if you're a non-believer, I want to get you in my door. And maybe over time, you'll see that we're a little different. A lot of people say, what's in your water at Sweetwater? They always think there's something special at Sweetwater. And, you know, until I get to really know them, I don't get to tell the whole story.
Well, it's really cool. I didn't realize this because even though I play piano, I'm not sitting there opening gear and ordering gear from Sweetwater.
Sure.
But one of the things I learned over the years is our team would talk about the experience with Sweetwater over and over again. And just the customer service and, oh, I had this rep just call and check in, make sure things are good. Do we need anything? And you just distinguishes yourself in that way. I mean, when do you have a company that's that high touch and whatnot? Was that part of the DNA from the very beginning, or was that something that you kind of added or got more intentional about over time?
Well, we clearly got more intentional through the years as we developed it. But no, that's the DNA of just always wanting to treat people the way you'd want to be treated, just always do the right thing. It goes back to the Boy Scouts. Mm-hmm. You know, it really does for me. And, you know, every employee that starts, we put them through 13 weeks of what we call Sweetwater University. And we teach them those sort of philosophies. We teach them how to develop a relationship with customers. We teach them how to work our information systems, but they don't talk to a customer until they've been through all that training. It's about 200 classes taught by 80 different teachers.
Wow.
It's almost like getting your doctorate.
Wow. So they really come out well trained after the whole process. That's so cool. Now, it's when people, I think, probably read the story online or hear about it, and you've already alluded to some of what I'm going to ask, but it goes, up and to the right, and it's just the next location and the next expansion and the next opportunity, all these things. But anybody who has tried to lead or build anything knows that is just not a nice, easy, always comfortable, up and to the right kind of journey. I would love it if you would be able to share with us what some of the challenges, maybe even some of the biggest challenges that you went through as you were growing the company.
You know, it's a question I've been asked before. And I will tell you, I've been just incredibly blessed just by focusing on the right things. I never worried about the money. I always wanted to do the right thing for customers, and the money seemed to follow. So, in those early days, there were credit cards that were maxed out. I was a little worried about the payroll next Friday when I had the responsibility of employees, but nothing that was really ever insurmountable. I will tell you what was probably the hardest years of my life were just a couple of years ago with COVID and the Black Lives Matter.
And how was that?
Well, I just really challenged my leadership, especially when you think about how COVID started in February of 2000. We had just opened, literally just opened, a brand new warehouse, 650,000 square feet. But only a couple of weeks later, we're told to shut it down. And you don't know how long it's going to last. Everybody, if you remember, back then people thought it might last 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
Well, it ended up lasting many, many months. And it was a real trial for us. And, myself, my wife, my then 13-year-old daughter were all in the warehouse packing boxes. And I consider it now a blessing in disguise, but at the time it was really a trial. All our leadership came in, but most of the employees were told to stay home by our governor and across the country. But during that period, since it was a brand new warehouse and all the leadership was in the warehouse working, we were able to find all kinds of issues to improve, to fix, that it might have taken years to fix if our normal employees would have found them. But because we were there in a leadership role, we were able to find all that stuff. So that's the blessing part. But it was just a really scary few months.
Do you mind commenting further on that, relative to some of the racial tensions at the time and how that was a challenge for you or for the company?
Yeah. So the Black Lives Matter, that was a really, really stressful time. And it started externally. And because we were a national presence, the folks that represented Black Lives Matter wanted us to put a public statement out. Well, I don't really want to put a public statement out. I know where my heart is. I know what we've supported in our community and all that sort of thing. And to support the actual group Black Lives Matter, which we later find out was maybe not the best group to support, a little dysfunctional, frankly. But because they were pushing really hard, I got it also pushed from inside the company, and it put me in a funk for a few months. And it finally became September of that year. So if you remember when this started in March, finally in September, I came to full realization that it's a small percentage of the people on both extremes that are the haters. And as much as I want everybody to love me, that just wasn't necessarily going to happen. There's just going to be a percentage of people that want to hate for whatever reason. And I found myself, up until that point, I was spending too much time on the haters and not the 95% of the people in the middle, whether it's my friends or employees or whatever. And so September comes around and I had a new lease on life. And I said, I'm choosing not to participate with this. I'm going to focus on the 95 good percent of the people, and I'll talk to the others, but I'm going to make my point and I'm going to move on and just not lose sleep over them. And so I really wanted to focus on the good things that were going on and not the few. Somehow the few small percentages had an awful, awful loud voice.
Yeah, boy, that was a tough, tough season. And as a leader, all of us from corporate leaders to pastors, obviously really had to navigate some tough challenges. And it's particularly, as you're saying, it's the external side is one thing, but when you have team members that you care about and you want to run a great company, and ultimately the reason why that was difficult was because you care about people and you want to do the right thing. And so that means you don't just blow off these questions and concerns lightly. You wrestle with them and you take them quite seriously. And Sounds like some hard lessons learned along the way.
Yeah.
I'm curious, when you think about your journey as a leader, when you start Sweetwater and you're first just out of your van, I don't know if it was even called Sweetwater then, and then you're out of the house and it continues to grow. Obviously, you have to keep growing and morphing as a leader. You can't just be the guy that you were when you started the company. How did you grow? How did you better yourself? How did you ready yourself for the ever-increasing responsibilities and opportunities that you had?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's interesting that I was able to lead the company, you know, through $1.5 billion. And that's just so unheard of. Usually the entrepreneur starts the company,
right,
and they get to $1 million to $10 million. They bring a partner or manager in, and next thing you know, they want an operator. The skill set that you need as an entrepreneur is a little bit different than what you need to run a business every day. And so it's not uncommon at about $10 million, the founder of the company is either gone or a different role, and there's someone else running it. At $100 million, it's really, really rare. You get to $1 billion, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but I'm saying you get to $1 billion and you still have the founder there. What I did, yes, I did get better. Yes, I did improve. But the biggest thing I did is I hired great people around me. So I made sure, you know, even though I've done every job in the company, but I found people that could do those jobs even better than I could. Now, I did pour into myself. You know, I am a self-learner, unlike most people listening today and most of my friends. I didn't go to college. I went on the road as a musician right away. But that doesn't mean I'm uneducated. I taught myself electronics. Sure. I taught myself computer programming. I taught myself all the accounting. So I just read, you know, and today, you know, with being online, I can read so much more than I did in books. So.
Was it hard for you to morph from that entrepreneurial startup mode, even adding the team members around you that had the different areas of expertise that they did? It's still internally, and I can say this as a founder with a strong entrepreneurial bent, there still is a shift that you have to be comfortable making in terms of how you function as a leader. Was that difficult for you, or did you just kind of move right into it?
There were periods that it was difficult, and I would say fortunately having great people around me that gave me a little bit of grounding and all that. But at the end of the day, I made the final decision. I was always in a meeting. I was always the last one to comment. I wanted to hear everybody else's opinion first. So I always respected my team and tried to have them engaged and involved. But there are plenty of times, and I don't mean this arrogantly at all, but the more you do things, the faster you can get to decisions quite often. And so I'd sit in a meeting, I go, crap, I know the answer already, but I got to go through the process. And I felt like they were slowing me down, but I had to go through the process because I didn't want to disrespect my employees and my friends, actually. But that would probably be the hardest thing. No, I stayed entrepreneurial. I'm still entrepreneurial to this day. So you're not going to pull that out of me or stop me.
Yeah.
More likely, it's me dragging you along a little bit faster. One of the things we had at Sweetwater, we called it Sweetwater Time. And in the early days, we responded quicker. We had to get back to customers fast. We had to get to vendors fast. And that was a huge, huge advantage in our early days. You know, they'd call, a customer might call another store and they either never hear back from them or it would take days and days. Well, you know, my goal is I want you to call the customer back today. You know, be clear when you talk to them what time you're going to call them back, and you call them back and exceed their expectations today. Worst case, tomorrow, and you tell them it's going to be tomorrow, and you do it. And that was a huge advantage. But I'll tell you today, when you think about Amazon and instant delivery and all that sort of stuff, it's just the standard way to do business.
Right.
And if you don't answer quickly, don't have good answers fast, the customer moves on to somewhere else. So, but it was a huge advantage for a long time for us, and it really set us up for today, frankly.
When you guys, it's amazing to think how ahead of the curve you were when it came to the timeliness of your response and overall customer service. When you are hiring for somebody today, and I'm sure you've gotten smarter and smarter about it, but there are going to be some folks who resonate with that and can jump right in, and there are other folks that maybe not so much. Have you felt like now you really can identify who are the folks that are going to function successfully in the Sweetwater way? And when you see somebody might not be getting it in the way you'd hope, what does that process look like?
Yeah, no, we do interview really hard. A long, long process. We check references. We put them through a battery of tests, but you do never know until they've been there a few months. And what we look for, though, more than anything, is fire in the belly. You know, are they looking in the eye? Do they really? I don't even care what the degree is. You know, fortunately, we're in a business where you don't need degrees specifically. But if they have fire in the belly, where they really look like they're on, and they have servant leadership qualities, you know, if we think they're really going to serve others, that's going to fit really well at Sweetwater. Mm-hmm.
you've continued, you referenced this, continued to be an entrepreneur beyond Sweetwater and have your influence and hands in a bunch of different pots. And it's funny when I look at some of the companies that I know you're involved with, some make sense. So not knowing you, I see there's clearly a passion for transportation between cars and helicopters. And maybe I think there's an aviation school as well. So there's clearly a transportation theme. But then I remember talking to my sister and brother-in-law, and they talked about Lounge Optical in Fort Wayne. And I thought, now how does he get to Lounge Optical? So maybe you could help me understand, how do you, even with an entrepreneurial spirit, there are a million opportunities out there. How do you decide what companies you want to get involved with?
Yeah, every one of them has a unique story. What I would tell you about Lounge Optical, which is one of the earlier ones in the business, the owner came to me and said, I'm losing the business. I've got 40 employees and we're not doing very well. There's optical stores on every corner around town. And I looked at the company and I saw that I could easily fix it. Or at least I thought I could easily fix it. And so I didn't spend a lot of money for it, but it was a brand that had been around since the 40s. They had 5 stores in Fort Wayne. But I saw right away that we really needed to improve the looks of the stores, the cleanliness of the stores. I needed to improve the lab and improve marketing. And so I bought the company probably 11, 12 years ago now, and it turned around completely. And today we have 6 stores. We've moved a couple stores. But my goal with Lounge Optical, I always wanted to sell. I knew the principles that we used at Sweetwater would apply to everybody. In the music business, we only sell to about 6 or 7% of the population. Mm-hmm. I always tease my wife that I wanted to sell ice cream because I could sell that to 100% of people. So Lounge Optical a little bit fulfills that dream for me. We really, not 100% of people wear glasses, but 100% of the people do need eye exams. And so 50% do wear glasses or contacts, that sort of thing. And it's a way to show that the customer service values that we offer at Sweetwater can apply at Lounge Optical and, frankly, all the other businesses. Mm-hmm. Any of the businesses all have a foundation on treating the customer right, doing the right thing, so on and so forth.
If you, a number of your businesses that you've come in as an owner to an existing business, has the journey to help transition maybe a culture into more of what you're hoping to see and what is more what been your experience at Sweetwater, have you felt like, yeah, I've gotten pretty good at making that transition? It feels like it could be tough. I mean, you're really coming in and trying to, I'm guessing at times, to make a serious culture change.
That's always the hardest part. The mechanics of the marketing, the mechanics of making the place look good, offering a quality, all that's easy. But the people that are involved and how you deal with the culture is really difficult. You know, I'm in the challenge of my life right now with a company I bought a year and a half ago up in Menominee, Michigan, which is on the west side of Lake Michigan. It's a helicopter manufacturing company, and they just have a different culture than we have here. They're great people. They work hard and all that, but it's just different. And so it's taken a long time to get there. And we have some other battles with the FAA and some other things that need approvals. But, yeah, it's always a challenge.
Is there anything in particular? So with Lounge, it was the owner came to you and said, hey, we're in a hard place and you saw some opportunity. Is there anything else that governs when you're looking for additional opportunities? Is it mostly just, I mean, it seems like you might have a passion for the transportation industry, or is there anything in particular that's driving your decisions besides it's an opportunity?
You know, I'm not looking for other businesses. They've all fallen in my lap one way or the other.
Okay.
So no, I'm not actually out looking. In fact, my wife might shoot me if I come home and tell her I'm part of the business.
When you look back at your career journey, obviously you've had to make tons of decisions over the years and every year. When you look in retrospect and you think about 2 or 3 of just the key game changer decisions, what would you identify those to be and why were they such game changers?
Wow. I think one of the big ones was in the fall of 2008 and 2009. I was on the board of directors of a local bank here that was publicly traded, but the recession was happening, and that bank was being told by the federal regulators that you need to call some of the loans due. And these are people that had paid their loans but the feds thought that the banks had too much in a certain category. It's also when General Motors had filed bankruptcy. You know, there was just a lot of turmoil going on. And I went back to the company. I pulled all 225 employees together, and I very famously said to them, I'm choosing to not participate in this recession. I've never laid anybody off. I don't ever want to lay anybody off. I don't want you looking over your shoulder for a new job. Let's just focus on what we do, focus on the basics, take care of the customers. And I'll tell you, during that next year, we dropped a few lines that didn't make as much sense for our company. We brought on some lines that made more sense for our company, but probably most importantly, we used that period when everyone else was laying folks off. We hired really great people. And, you know, I can count today, we've got 45 years come January. We've been in business, and every year the top line and the bottom line have been better than the year before. But I drove the business that year. I chose not to participate in the recession, and I still have employees come up to me and remind me of that. And it just it gave them the confidence to focus on what we do really well and move forward.
That must be. I mean, I think for every leader, there's a few decisions you probably look back on with a certain amount of a healthy kind of pride, where you think we took the hard road, the courageous road, and you just are thankful you did, and you think that was one of those moments I'll look back on and go, yeah, we stepped up. Any others that come to mind that you go, that was a massive decision, whether because it took so much courage, whether it was because it affected so many people, or maybe it was just a big risk?
Yeah, I would say two more. The second one I already mentioned, that September of 2020, after I had gone through 5 months or so of feeling pretty low, frankly, it was the hardest days of my whole life, both professionally and even personally.
Wow.
And to come back in September and say, I've got to be in control. I've got to be the leader that my employees are counting on. That, you know, and it's not just the employees. It's the employees and all of their families. And I knew what a big, big responsibility that was. We probably had 2,200 or so employees at the time. And that reaches thousands and thousands of people. And here I wasn't leading very well. And so I was disappointed in myself. But I'm so thrilled that I was able to pull myself up and really encourage again and do the leading that I needed to do.
What led you to pull your, I mean, not what led you, but certainly, you know, was that just a one day you woke up and you said, I've got to change? Or was there a particular catalyst where you obviously, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, I'm not in my best place right now. But what really was the catalyst to find your normal gear?
I was responding, and to this day, I respond to every email I get. And I was responding to emails and emails and emails of people that frankly were just irrational, or they didn't have the right facts. And sadly, the internet has some incredible stuff going on, but it also has some really negative stuff. And I believe the internet gives power to people that in the past would not have had power, and they can do it anonymously. And I took every one of those personally and responded to everyone. Anyway, I got sick of it. I just literally got sick of, you don't even know what you're talking about. Look at all the good things we do. How can you say such awful, mean things? I finally realized it was their problem. It wasn't my problem. And I wasn't going to allow it to be the problem of my employees anymore. I just know the good work we've done for, at that time, 40 years.
So you just came to that point of resolution where you said, this is it. Yeah.
That was it. Right. Yeah. And immediately when I said that to myself and then to the employees at a big company meeting we had, I just felt better and I could lead well again for the next several years.
Wow. Good for you.
And then the last one, which is hard, is the idea of selling Sweetwater. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would do that. But it's a long technical story and I won't go into all, but it had to do with inheritance tax and all of that. We're trying to find what is the right strategy. And I had talked to lots of experts on what do we do? What's the value of the company? How much do we have to pay in inheritance tax when my wife and I both die? Which is it's a good problem to have, and it's a bad problem to have in the United States. And it was going to create an incredible burden for the company. I wanted to make sure the company could continue on long after our lives. And I didn't see that my children would be able to do that. And so I tried to figure out what to do. And I met with some companies and they said, well, we could help you sell the company. And I said, I don't know. I love what I do. I'm gonna die at my desk. That's literally what I said. And they said, well, let's go through the process. And if you don't like it, you can back out at any time up until the last minute. And you won't have to pay much money, just some, you know, money for the basic work, but you won't pay a transaction fee. And I set some really strong pillars in place of what was important to me. You know, the company needs to stay in Fort Wayne. You got to respect our leadership. You got to continue to invest in the nonprofits and all that sort of stuff. And went through a process and ended up choosing a company that I thought would lead us well into the future. And so August of 22, sold the majority of the company. Now, my wife and I still own a big piece, but we don't own the majority anymore. And we left the company in incredible hands. And the fellow that runs it today is a guy named Mike Klim. Brilliant guy. I'm thrilled that he's in charge of the company. And I think the best days are ahead for Sweetwater. You know, I'd done it for a long time, gotten older, and we've got a bunch of young, bright people running the company, men and women. And I think the best years are ahead of us for Sweetwater. But that's a little hard to walk away because it's my baby. And it will always be my baby, especially the size it got to and all that. The other thing I would tell you is that it was an interesting emotional thing. You know, I grew Sweetwater with the help of a lot of great people. I'm not taking credit for it, but grew it to the largest in the world at what we did. We sell more online music instruments than anybody else.
Wow.
And I knew that I would never be at the top of something like that again. And so emotionally, it was really hard, but it was the right thing to do for the employees and all the families that are involved. And I'm just excited that we're able to do it. The good thing is we walked away with some money, started a foundation, and we can do even more support to our local and regional community like we have for many, many years.
I love just the little I've read about your journey of selling the company, how intentional you were. I know Sweetwater has just meant so much to Fort Wayne, and you guys have such a heart for the city. It's not just about we provide jobs, investing in countless other ways. And so it really was fun to read about how intentional you were on the front end. I can't imagine, and obviously you're not even quite a year and a half since closing then. Was it the journey transitioning out of that role where you are no longer the majority owner? Was it about what you expected? Was it, wow, this is way different than what I expected? What was that like? I mean, I just can't even imagine what that would be like.
Right. And let me correct myself. It was August of 21.
21. Okay. So we got a few years. Okay.
Yeah. It's hard. I will just say it's my identity. It's my whole adult life. Everybody, you know, it's a small town in Fort Wayne, so everybody knows me as Mr. Sweetwater, mm-hmm. whatever. On the other hand, a lot of people today know that I did sell it, and they're still seeing Sweetwater do great stuff in the community, and they see my wife and I able to do even more stuff. But it's hard, especially the first 6 months, mm-hmm. And I miss the friends. So many people there were, you know, my friends, mm-hmm. and they still are to this day, but, you know, it's just hard when you see them every day, and now you don't see them so often, but I'm just really, really busy, busier than I've ever been actually doing other stuff. And so it's okay. I get over there every couple of weeks.
Well, it's a great, I mean, for any of us that have to make transitions, and they may not be as big as the one you just described, but you make the decision that's the right decision for the time and for the people, but that doesn't mean it's grief-free. And it's just good to name that. I'm curious, when you have, to me at least, when I have key transition moments like that, in life, I end up reflecting on people that I'm grateful for, the people that helped get me to where I am today or where our church is today. And on the one hand, there are just so many different people who are part of the journey, but are there, you know, there are probably two or three, at least for me, that if I started talking about them in the context of my gratitude, it would be hard to not get emotional. Do you have anybody that really stands out for you as, wow, those people were just... everybody has a special place, but they have an extra special place in your either personal or professional journey.
Yeah. You know, in the professional journey, there are several names. I'm not going to name them because I'll leave out a couple and then I'll feel really bad.
Right.
But there are some that just extraordinary, you know, to this day, they're great friends. And the fun thing about the sale of Sweetwater, I was able to take care of so many of my friends that way. And that's just very rewarding. They don't have to work anymore, and yet they are continuing to work because they want to. But yeah, just extraordinary, extraordinary relationships and friendships that will be there for the rest of our lives.
Right on. When as the company is getting more successful, and as you're really starting to be able to experience some of that success, I would love for you to speak into perhaps some of the, and I can say this as you're a person of faith, and I am too, some of the temptations that come with success, with extra resources. And I'm asking you that primarily because there are going to be some budding entrepreneurs listening to this that someday are going to experience more opportunity than they ever imagined and more assets than perhaps they ever imagined. Are there ways that you would speak in looking back, and you think about somebody at the beginning of their journey where they're really going to experience some success in a considerable way, that you would coach them now, some guardrails or some words of caution or coaching that you would speak into their lives relative to just what comes with success and oftentimes with wealth?
Yeah, I don't know if I would call them temptations or not, but I would say... there are lots of steps, lots of things along the way. You know, in the early days, I would tell you, I didn't get a lot of support or love like we get today. In fact, my professional friends, whether it's the accountant, the lawyers, would say, recording studio, Fort Wayne, Indiana, that won't work. You got to go to Nashville. You got to go to LA. You got to go to New York. And I would encourage folks, yes, you want to listen to those around you, but if it's your dream and it's your passion, go for it. I probably was discouraged in the early days. And I look back now and think, well, that's a little bit arrogant of me. They didn't speak my language any more than I speak French or Latin. I guess you don't speak Latin. It's a dead language. But, and I can't blame them that they didn't have that dream in their head or their eyes. I would just challenge anyone to go for it. I would also say that if you're going to go for it, you got to be all in. There is so much competition today. And if you want to be successful, you got to balance carefully between life, the rest of life, and how in you are. I talk to some entrepreneurs or young people, and they'll tell me they want to be in business. And I say, why? Well, because I can work 30 hours. I don't want to work for the man. I don't think that works. I've had 100-hour weeks. I've had 80-hour weeks. And you got to balance it. And I tell people all the time, I work really hard when I work. I also play really hard when I play and make sure that I have quality family time. I went to every one of my children's music events and sporting events. I just didn't miss them. That was a priority for me. But I also worked long, hard hours when I needed to work long, hard hours. The entrepreneurship is doing what you got to do to get the job done.
Right.
So on and so forth. Guardrails, as I've been more and more successful in Fort Wayne, it's a little uncomfortable. I feel like everybody knows this. I was at lunch today and somebody made a comment. I made a comment back and they were talking about, it was nice to see you. And they were talking about the people next to us. I said, it's nice to see you too. And she said, well, I know who you are, Mr. Surak. And she said, really nice for you. And all that.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. My wife and I, everywhere we go, people seem to know us. It's fine. I'm okay with it. Maybe bothers her a little bit more. But I know people are just, they want to meet you. They want to know who you are. And it's a little uncomfortable. I guess you have to get used to being uncomfortable like that.
Yeah, that's a good word.
I stand in grocery store lines and I'll hear people whispering behind me or pointing at me, and I usually will turn around and introduce myself.
Yeah.
It's just curiosity on that part.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I was talking with a gentleman the other day at church, and he said, yeah, I was watching you the other day. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, you were at Lowe's a couple people in front of me. And I had never met him before. He said, and I was watching to see how you would handle yourself and how you would treat all of the workers at Lowe's there to see if you were really a guy who walked your talk. And I thought,
wow,
man, all right. And I said, how'd I do? He said, it seemed all right to me. So I'm still at the church. So I thought, well, okay, that's good. But it's just that's the nature of being a little bit more in the public eye, is you just know there's some people around. I don't know how you're wired with this, but to me, that's a great opportunity to encourage folks and have some relationships I wouldn't maybe otherwise have.
I go out of my way everywhere I am just to be a little bit more kind, a little bit more gracious, a little bit more thank you. This time of the year, we give a little bit more, or even quite a bit more tips, to waiters and waitresses. And I just love being able to have the ability to go around and be kind to others.
Yeah. Well, that really speaks into, or leads to a good question I was going to ask. In general, when you think about how your faith, and you're pretty outspoken about who you are and that you follow Jesus, how do you see your faith as having impacted your business, your leadership, and how you manage all of your responsibilities?
Well, I think it 100% affected our business. There is no way you could think about how the company grew from nothing. I started with nothing, didn't go to college, and yet it grew into this pretty darn amazing thing. That's all a God thing.
Yeah,
there's just no way a human or humans together can do it without God's hand guidance. It was His plan, His path. I love that I'm able to share that with people. I think it's the main reason we've been wildly successful is that we just always did the right thing. We always knew that we had Him helping us and over our shoulder. I also love, I mentioned early on, that I felt that we were a ministry. And unlike a church where some people will come into the church door and others are afraid to come into the church door, they'll come to Sweetwater. And they may not know what our background is, but they eventually figure out, man, they're kind of different around there. What is it? I mentioned the water thing. But
yeah.
This love that we're able to do that. And we have directly supported other ministries, so on and so forth. We started a new church several years, 15 years ago now. And my friend called me and said, hey, there's a new church starting. would you want to help us with a sound system? I said, yeah, I'll help you. And so I helped with a sound system. Well, the church started in a movie theater, which is not completely unusual. But what was amazing about the movie theater is that it brought a cross section of people in, believers from the past, non-believers. But they would want to see, you know, it was less intimidating than a traditional church. And we operated out of that church for a couple, or out of that movie theater for a couple of years until we eventually moved into a bigger building. And today there's nearly 2,000 people coming to this church that started in a movie theater that was not very intimidating. So I love that aspect of it.
Yeah, that's really cool. How do you, obviously, not every employee at Sweetwater is a Christian. How do you navigate that tension? And a lot of our business leaders and business listeners will feel that tension of, I want to be appropriately transparent about my faith while also maintaining an atmosphere that is perfectly comfortable to anybody from any background. What did that look like at Sweetwater? How did you navigate that?
Yeah, we were very transparent. Most of our leadership team are believers, but we didn't force it down anybody's throat. And you know, look, regardless of whether I like your lifestyle or what you believe in, you're still a human being. I still want to love you. Maybe you'll follow my path. Maybe you won't. That's okay. I don't know that my path is completely right either, but I just want to love everybody. And I don't, you know, I'm only going to go so far. I can't change.
Yeah. So they just pick up on that atmosphere. And if I recall, and this is, you're going to have to help me in my memory here. I recall walking around the Sweetwater building, and I don't think I've been there since the most recent expansion, but I recall there were a number of almost like storefronts as you walked through the concourse. And I feel like, and man, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong here, that there were a variety of opportunities that employees could benefit from within the office. Am I on point at all here? What was the big idea behind those?
Yeah, well, first off, it's a big building, and a lot of people have 1 million square feet, so it's a big building. Starting from a VW bus to 1 million square feet.
Crazy.
And so it's a community, and it's everything from, of course, there's a place where you can bring your children for music lessons, there's the music store, but then we do a lot of other things. There's a kiosk, you know, ATM sort of thing. We have a salon where you get your hair done, massage, nails, all that. There's a racquetball court. There's a full health club where we have a professional that helps you with your diet and your routine and how to use the machines and all that. We have a full-time doctor and nurse.
Wow.
Completely 100% free. Full-time doctor and full-time nurse.
Wow.
Help employees if you need a quick COVID test or you need a shot or, you know, a Z-Pack. Instead of taking the rest of the day off, you can come see Dr. Todd and get that quick checkup and just a lot of things, services. There's a coffee bar in the middle of it. There's a full restaurant. We just want to do things to make it easier and better for our employees and their families.
Yeah. And that's, I feel like, such a great example when it comes to this whole idea of how does your faith and how is your faith translating at Sweetwater. I mean, we can just say it is abnormal, but in the most pleasant of ways and beautiful of ways, to have that level of care and compassion and intentionality for the team. How can they not feel so deeply appreciated when your team is dreaming up ways to better serve them? It's really just a fantastic example. I remember walking through that for the first time, the facility, and just being inspired for what you stand for. Apart from being a guy who even orders anything from Sweetwater, though, as I said before we started today, I see Sweetwater boxes show up at our church's doorstep on a regular basis. But
thank you.
Yeah, it's just it's fantastic to see. Now you've shifted, and you referenced this already. You've shifted considerably into your philanthropic endeavors. You've always been really involved in building up ministries in Fort Wayne and nonprofits, and I'm sure quite beyond as well. But tell us a little bit about, it'd be impossible for you to sit here and tell us all about what you're involved in, but now you're in a position where you are able to support and be involved in a number of different philanthropic opportunities. Obviously far more opportunities out there than what you can plug into. How do you determine this is where we're going to make a difference? Is it just organic? Do you have a set of core interests or values that you go after those? How do you decide that?
Yeah, my wife and I, for a long time, have had some very important goals, if you will, or things that are important to us. And when we started our foundation, we very specifically put them down. One of them is mental health. Mental health is just really, really tough today. And frankly, post-COVID, it's even worse. Even in your field, you know, I read a study recently, nearly 40% of the pastors have considered leaving that role. world in the last 2 years, which is just unbelievable to me, because we need great pastors. We need great leaders.
Yeah.
Mental health is huge. And then the next one for us, it's really important, is human welfare and children specifically. I can't imagine, we're living in the best country in the world, they say, and yet there's still 3,000 people that are homeless in Fort Wayne every night. There are children that are hungry for school. I'm involved with an organization called Love Fort Wayne. It's an offshoot of what used to be GLS. And mm-hmm. we wanted to make GLS, which is a two-day thing out of Barrington Hills, Illinois. We wanted to do more than 2 days. So we call it Love and Beyond, and we're trying to create a movement. We are creating a movement in Fort Wayne. But one of the pillars that we're doing is we're focusing on three inner city schools, and they're just struggling for the basic stuff. Mm-hmm. We went to this one school just a few months ago, and the principal, who's just a rock star, she's got 50 great teachers working with her. And we said, what are the top three things you need? We're going to bring this as part of our movement to your school. And she says, well, number one is food. And number two is food. And number three is food.
Wow.
This is a school that's in a desert part of our community. There's no churches around, no grocery stores. It's out on the east side of Fort Wayne where International Harvester used to be. And we quickly figured out, you know, if these children don't have food in their stomach, they can't even think about learning. And so we got a bunch of people together. We put a little food pantry together. And now you would talk to this principal and she'd say food is not the number one need or concern. And we're just trying to do that like crazy. So human welfare and hungry children just breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, education of little ones, when they get to kindergarten, if they don't know their shapes and their ABCs, they're going to be behind. And by third grade, if they're not reading, they can't do math in fourth grade. And if they're not doing all that, they're going to be behind not only in high school, but they're going to be behind the rest of their lives. And so we're working really hard to make sure that the little ones can come to school prepared to learn. They got to have food in their belly and they got to know the basics. And so we're working on a lot of stuff like that right now.
Wow. So exciting.
Yeah, it is. But man, it's a big job. It's just a big job. And it's not just us. There are a lot of people working on that. So
is that what takes the majority of your time now when you talk about we're busier than we ever have been? Has it been the shift to more philanthropic things, or is it other things beyond that?
You know, I have a little bit more time to do philanthropic, although I will tell you the last many years of Sweetwater, I had such great leadership. I could serve a lot of nonprofit organizations, even in my last few years at Sweetwater, but I can be a little more intentional now. It's a combination of the 15 other businesses I own and all these nonprofits, and some I serve directly on the board as board chair, that sort of thing. Some of the others I'm just serving on the board as a regular board member. But there's just a lot of great needs and a lot of great people working on serving those needs. And I'm sure it's happening in every city across the country. So
I sure appreciate what you're doing with Love Fort Wayne. I was invited to be part of a gathering. It would have been, I don't know if it was a couple winters ago, that was about 60 pastors that were gathering at Brotherhood Mutual. And I sat, and now my memory is a little too foggy because I don't interact with the president of Parkview and of Brotherhood Mutual often, but I was sitting at their table and just hearing their hearts. It's interesting growing up in Fort Wayne, and then I got my business degree at Indiana University and then moved to Chicago and then here in Michigan. And now it is so fun to go back to Fort Wayne and see all of the ways that intentional, compassionate people are leading the city well. Everything from things like Love Fort Wayne, the more I was learning, the more my heart was beating fast, and watching these leaders have such a heart for the city, for pastoral leaders and all kinds of other nonprofit leaders. But then all the work that's been done on infrastructure, on making Fort Wayne a fun city, adding more walking paths, the work done downtown and the river, the river areas and all, so incredible. And it's fun to see that. But I recall the time them talking about you being part of Love Fort Wayne, and it seems like that's just making a massive difference.
Yeah, Love Fort Wayne has several pillars themselves, and one is loving our pastors. So we're just pouring into pastors, trying to help them any way we can. It's lonely at the top. I'm sure you know that. There aren't very many people you can talk to. And so we want to love our pastors. We're trying to love our schools, love our teachers, and love our families. You know, divorce rate is just awful, particularly in Southeast Fort Wayne, but it's bad everywhere. And so we got to go to Chattanooga, Tennessee a couple years ago and saw what they had done. And they've made over the last 20 years some remarkable double-digit improvement in divorce rate, lowering divorce rate. And we want to bring some of that to Fort Wayne and just help people, love people.
Love it. Well, last thing I'd love to ask you, Chuck, before we are done for the day, is if you were to speak to someone, and this is going to be a broad question, so good luck, but if you were to share a word with somebody right now who who really feels like they've got a need to move forward in an area of life. And it, this is where it's broad because that could be a relational, they need to take a step. They need to take a step professionally and they're hesitant to do so. Is there any particular advice or way that you would speak into that person who goes, man, something needs to change?
Boy, that is a broad question.
Yeah.
Let me approach it from my point of view first.
Sure.
What I have breathed in my head and thought and taught others for a long time that anything is possible. Mm. Anything is possible. And failure is not an option. I mean, I've heard stories of, well, it's kind of common for an entrepreneur or a business to go out of business, file bankruptcy. I don't believe that. I believe failure is just not an option. And there's always a way. Anything's possible. And so that's how maybe in some of those early days when you asked earlier about, you know, difficult times or whatever, mm-hmm. maybe I transitioned without even thinking about it because I knew failure was not an option and anything is possible. What I would say, maybe a little more open-minded to others, is there are lots and lots of people that really do care. There are lots of people that love you. There are lots of resources. You know, if you need help, whether it's, you know, physical help, mental health, or just general business direction, mm-hmm. any one of those sorts of things, or spiritual, there are so many people that are willing to help. And that's what I love about our world, that there are people that are willing to give of themselves.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask, because people like helping. They yeah. like helping others.
Yeah, that's such a great word. I mean, even you being on this podcast, we're recording one here before it's even officially launched. And I think of you with the professional journey you've been on, making time and living out exactly what you're saying. And that's the thing, when you've lived through a lot and you've led and you've accomplished things, you love to see those learnings and sometimes those risks and sometimes hard learnings multiplied in the life of others for good, to see them get further faster. So I love how you're living out the very advice you're giving. You're also saying, dream big, believe there's huge potential and a promise in your life. I hear you saying there's a call for perseverance to recognize, yeah, it's going to be difficult. And anybody who out there is thinking that they're going to do a 30-hour work week and found a successful company, or phone in the bare minimum effort into their marriage or their family or their own mental health, I'm sorry, that's probably not reality. I think your call for not just on the professional level, but in all levels, is if you're going to be successful at what you do, it's going to take sustained work over a long period of time and to be diligent about it. And while you're doing it, you don't need to think you're a lone ranger. It's all on you, because there's a whole community of people that love to support, to speak in and encourage. And that's exactly what you're doing today. And so, Chuck, thank you so much for making the time to share with us. Thanks for your faithful example of leadership and integrity over so many years in Fort Wayne and beyond. And I know that the words you shared today are going to encourage and stimulate and catalyze and challenge many. So thanks for spending time with us today. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Brian. I really enjoyed my time and I hope I can help others.
Well, I hope you were encouraged by this conversation today with Chuck. It was such a good word that he shared with us, that he pursued his passion, he aimed to serve people well, and then a lot of the other aspects of the business just took care of themselves. I would encourage you right now, if you're at the beginning of your journey, professionally or otherwise, don't make your goal being rich and successful and building something big. Make it your goal to serve people well. When you do that, so much of the rest of your problems and your needs will take care of themselves. Now, if you have been encouraged by this episode, I want to ask you a favor. Please subscribe today to Made to Advance. Comment, share what you experienced on this podcast with your friends. Help us get the word out. That is such an encouragement to all of us. We've got more great conversations coming your way. It's been a production of Engedi Church, and we are glad to bring this content to you. Until next time, just know you were made to advance.